Welcome to Today on Broadway for Monday, June 12th, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
So James, how was your weekend? Anything exciting happen?
Nothing really. I'm just kind of waiting for Bette to finish her speech.
I just want to say, obviously we are a little slap happy and delirious because we are coming to you just a few minutes after the 71st annual Tony Awards ended on CBS. James, not a ton of surprises during the Tony Awards. I think most of the winners, there's maybe a handful, two or three, that I think were surprises. Otherwise, things went off about as predictable as they could be, both in terms of the winners and in terms of the ungodly lame impressions that Kevin Spacey did. But for the most part, you know, it was an entertaining, if not overwhelming, Tony Awards telecast.
It was. It was literally, we talk about every year that Tony Awards is a 3-hour commercial for Broadway, and literally that whole middle section where they did the Sarah Bareilles and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and the Bronx Tale.
Christian Borel.
Borel, yeah.
Or whatever he said. He definitely didn't say Christian Borel, but...
No. That's very funny. And you're not even Christian Borel. You're the understudy.
Yeah. Didn't say Christian Borel, though. Borel, maybe?
Or something? Yeah, something.
But it was perfect because it was right on Christian. But yeah. Anyway, James, let's get into the awards. We're going to run through a good chunk of the awards, not all of them. We'll obviously have a link to all of the awards in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com if you want to check those out. But first... starting with the big ones. In the Best Play category, the trophy went to J.T. Rodgers in Oslo. Best Musical was Dear Evan Hansen. Best Book of a Musical went to Stephen Levinson from Dear Evan Hansen. Best Original Score went to Benj Pasek and Justin Paul of Dear Evan Hansen. Best Revival of a Play was Manhattan Theater Club's production of August Wilson's Jitney. Best Revival of a Musical was Hello, Dolly. Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role in a Play went to Kevin Kline for Present Laughter. Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role in a Play went to Laurie Metcalf from Doll's House Part 2. Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role in a Musical went to Ben Platt for Dear Evan Hansen. Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role in a Musical went to Bette Midler, Hello, Dolly. Those two kind of fought over who had more words in their acceptance speech, although I still think Ben Platt got it done in about a minute less time. Best Performance by an Actor in a Featured Role in a Play went to Michael Aronoff from Oslo. Best Performance by an Actress in a Featured Role in a Play went to Cynthia Nixon from Lillian Hellman's The Little Foxes. Best Performance by an Actor in a Featured Role in a Musical went to Gavin Creel from Hello, Dolly. The first one that I don't know, this was a super surprise here, James, but it was one where I think the category was so close there wasn't a clear defined winner. Best Performance by an Actress in a Featured Role in a Musical went to Rachel Bay Jones for Dear Evan Hansen. Best Direction of a Play, actually both the Best Direction categories, James, both surprised me. I'm going to be honest with you. Best Direction for a Play went to Rebecca Taishman for Indecent. It makes me very happy that she won. However, I was even more shocked that she won, that Christopher Ashley won for Best Direction of a Musical for Come From Away. I kind of just assumed that the great Rachel Chavkin, who we have expressed our admiration for a long time here, did not win for Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812. And then finally, Best Choreography went to Andy Blankenbuehler for Bandstand, getting their only award of the night. James, overall, Dear Evan Hansen led the way with 6 Tony Awards. Hello, Dolly came in with 4. And then there was a run of 4 shows that had 2 wins: Indecent, The Little Foxes, Oslo, and Natasha Pierre and The Great Comet of 1812. It had 12 nominations, led the way, Great Comet did, and only won 2. Then it followed up a bunch of shows with 1, Bandstand, Come From Away, Doll's House Part 2, Jitney, The Play That Goes Wrong, and Present Laughter. I think The Play That Goes Wrong might be my favorite of the night because I'm just anticipating what their marketing team is going to do with the Tony win because they've been hilarious this whole time. So really excited to see what those folks come up with for their next web campaign.
So what did you think of the opening number, the Kevin Spacey Groundhog Day integration into all the other shows?
I actually liked the opening number. Kevin Spacey will never be described as a great singer, but he's, I think, in our Broadway World Slack channel, we were saying he was serviceable. I mean, he's a decent singer. He wasn't, you know, great. Turned out to be much better than Stephen Colbert was, but I liked it overall. It was funny, and I think I saw some people online. I think it might have been And I don't remember who it was. It might have been Adam Feldman, who said that the opening number was exactly what a Tony's opening number should be. It was a number that was full of theater jokes for theater people. It wasn't trying to placate a wider audience. It was having inside jokes that really only people who not only knew theater, but knew this theater season would get. So I really appreciated that. I really enjoyed that. I liked the opening number. It was the thing that I liked the most from Kevin Spacey, but we can get into some of those other things as we go on. But overall, I liked the opening number. I thought it was pretty strong.
Do you know if it was written by the brothers over at Something Rotten?
I do not know, but that would make a lot of sense.
I think that it was Carrie and – oh, I'm so bad at names.
Patrick.
Yeah. I think they wrote it. I'm not positive about that. Somebody fact-check me and yell at me about this. But I thought that it was very clever. I think it was – pulled off really well. I think that what did you think about the musical numbers that were presented? Which one did the best for you?
Well, I gotta be honest with you, I've come to the conclusion that this season is full of shows that I love in principle and I love in concept and conceit, but I'm just not sure from what I've seen. Again, I haven't seen any of these shows, but from the performances I've seen on television and the cast albums, that I just don't actually like them in practice. I loved two performances. Let me go through my notes to make sure that's correct. I actually loved three performances. The two that I liked the most were Great Comet. I mean, I think that one just kind of like blew everything else out of the water, because I think it completely sold what that show is at its heart. It had these great, you know, booming vocals from Josh Groban, and then the rest was just a kick-ass party. Like, that just looks so much fun, and I don't know how you can watch that and not say, I want to get a ticket to Great Comet. I thought that was fantastic. The next one that I loved, I'm probably a little biased because she was a guest on our Tony Omnibus episode, but it was Miss Saigon with Eva Noblezada. I thought she just – I mean, she was the second performance of the night, the first solo performance of the night pretty much. I mean, there was – the rest of the cast kind of did the opener, but she really sang the first solo. I thought she absolutely killed it. I've been in the bag for her since I saw the West End one, the stream, so I really enjoyed that. I liked Dear Evan Hansen. I don't know that it was obviously Ben Platt's been coming off 72 hours of vocal rest. I think the performance itself was really good. I think that song is probably Pascal Paul's most catchy and accessible song, even though Dear Evan Hansen is not my favorite album of theirs, but I liked that one. And then I was also really impressed with Bandstand at the end. You know, it's interesting because James, Bandstand was not on any of the press releases that announced what shows would be performing. So when we started to see Laura Osnes send out social media posts that they were rehearsing for the Tonys, I got a little curious, and I wonder if that has something to do with the fact that Dr. Jill Biden ended up introducing them. I wonder if they were still contemplating late into the process whether or not she would be involved, so they weren't 100% sure if Bandstand would perform or not. But I did think that was fairly interesting.
I thought that that Bandstand did great, and I really enjoyed mm-hmm. the number that they did. And I don't remember enjoying it that much when I was actually in the theater. So I think that they did a very good job at that. And hopefully Bandstand will get a bump there in their box office based upon that number. And they really need it. And Dr. Jill Biden, I was like, why is Dr. Jill Biden coming out? And I was like,
It made sense. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think that's one of those things, James, because, I think there were a lot of people that were thinking when it wasn't announced as being part of the performances of the Tony Awards, a lot of people kind of assumed that it might be closing fairly soon and they just didn't want to put any money into a Tony performances. But for me, if you're going to spend all the money to do this show or this production number on the Tonys, you're probably going to hope that you have some sort of box office benefit from it leading into the summer. Now, obviously, there's a lot of other reasons that these performances are important, but that's one of them. So you're not going to sink in a couple $100,000 and then close the next day. So I would imagine that means that the producers over at Bandstand are going to try to keep it running for at least, you know, through Labor Day.
So falsettos and Christian Borle got up and did a number. I don't think it was tremendously well received, but they also paired it off with an announcement. So let's talk quickly about that announcement.
Yeah, the announcement is that the the version that was originally filmed and it was originally going to be on PBS. That is still happening. That is going to happen in October on PBS. But we found out that over the summer on July 12th, starting July 12th, depends on your, you know, your different region, check your local movie theaters. This filmed version of Falsettos will come to movie theaters around the country. I got to admit, James, you have a long history with the Falsettos. This is a show whose either score or the videos that I've seen of performances has never really done anything for me. Again, it's one of those shows that I like in concept, but have never really gotten into in terms of execution. But I'm excited to see this because I think seeing the whole thing, especially with such a fantastic cast, could probably change that and open my eyes as to why so many people love this show.
You know, in previous years when they have done little snippets from plays on the Tony Awards, it has never, ever worked for me. And I think because plays especially are really hard when you take them out of sequence and out of context. And I think the same thing is happening with Falsettos here. I really am a big fan of Falsettos, and I really like this revival. And I think out of context, everybody's like, I'm not really sure what's going on that stage right now.
Yeah.
So, sure. So I encourage you to go out and watch the PBS special or go to the theaters and see the Falsettos film that is going to be playing that was recorded on Broadway. And we'll see what happens there. The Rockettes took the stage.
That was one... James, seriously, there were so many things that I don't understand why they had to happen. I mean, why were the Rockettes there? You're telling me we couldn't have done a dance number for, New York, New York that involved, I don't know, maybe some Broadway dancers.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that I didn't understand. Why is Kevin Spacey doing impressions of Johnny Carson, who's been dead for 12 years? He's been dead for 12 years. Not the most topical reference. And then he doesn't. Awful Bill Clinton impression. Like, seriously, what is going on? I will say, though, that if I had to suffer through his terrible – the Johnny Carson impression was fine. Just why he was doing it was ridiculous. And his terrible Bill Clinton impression, just to get the idea of a Usual Suspects musical with him and Chaz Palminteri, I will take it because I love the Usual Suspects. But other than that, some of those bits were just awful. I know you enjoyed the House of Cards Frank Underwood one at the end.
Yeah, as he came out to give the card of best musical to Lin-Manuel Miranda, who looks very clean cut in Boy Next Door. He could play John Truitt, Meet Me in St. Louis, with that look.
All right.
Frank Underwood or Kevin Spacey, as Frank Underwood says, I want to get the hell out of here before Bette Midler thinks anyone else. And I thought it was very, very funny.
What I thought was weird, though, was that you get Frank Underwood, but you don't mention Robin Wright, who is in the biggest movie in the country right now, or Michael Kelly, who's a Broadway alum, as Doug Stamper standing behind him. Just no mention of them at all. They walk in, they're arm candy, they walk out. But, you know, whatever. Just another puzzling thing. But then, James, the biggest puzzling thing of the night to me was, what in the hell was that closing number? Like, I get that Kevin Spacey loves him some Bobby Darin. He played Bobby Darin in a movie. And anytime you can get Patti LuPone to sing a closing number, I'm all for it. But seriously, this is a celebration of all the things that are great in theater. So you're singing a song that's not a theater song. Yes, maybe it's about show business. That's fine. But it's like a slow down tempo ballad that puts everyone to sleep or makes them want to, you know, drown themselves in sorrows. What was that? This was such a fun night. And then you've got that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, some quick things from the press room. So Benj Pasek and Justin Paul talked a little bit about when they first got to New York and started writing shows from that school up north.
Stop.
But they moved to New York, and some of the people they hooked up with were like were Jeff Marks. Jeff Marks loaned them money and said, pay me back when you get your first show on Broadway so that they could get by. Stephen Schwartz has shown up for them at every stage of their development. Whenever they had a reading or a workshop or a preview or things like that, Stephen would come and work with them and give them notes and things like this. And they talked about how much the Broadway community has embraced them. And I thought that was really wonderful. And those are stories that need to get out there and be told. Nick Kroll and John Mulaney. Oh, my
Dude,
goodness.
Just let them do whatever they want.
So
forever.
Funny. So funny. Good.
They hosted, I think we might have even talked about it at one point here. Maybe it was on Some Like a Pop, but they hosted the Independent Spirit Awards or something during the movie award series season earlier this year. And they were just hilarious. They did something like that bit for 15 minutes about the movies, and it is hilarious. I did not see Oh Hello, but I am so excited that it is coming to Netflix this summer. They were fantastic.
So did you fall for the Josh Gad forum revival?
Oh, so angry.
Yeah.
So angry.
Oh, yeah.
So what I was doing during the Tonys for Broadway World is I was writing up stories that for news that broke. I was trying to get additional videos from the things that happened during the commercials or pre-show. So I'm in the middle of updating our story that we're going to talk about here in a little bit about big companies pulling their sponsorship of the public theater. So I'm getting ready to hit publish on a new update to that story. And then Josh Gad says that, and I'm like, well, crap, I got to start a story for that. And then he said he was lying. I was... None too pleased, Mr. Gad. That's not funny. Words can hurt.
And other stuff that came from the press room is Lynn Meadows and Barry Grove from Manhattan Theater Club.
Yes, this is good. Talking
about Jitney, and Lynn Meadows said over and over and over, I don't think you've seen the last of Jitney. I don't think you've seen the last of
This is something we've talked about before. Ruben Santiago Hudson had said that even before they closed on Broadway, that he was hoping to find a place for it to transfer. So I don't know if it's going to come back or if maybe this cast will be the ones that Denzel Washington works with in bringing it to HBO or something, or if they're maybe going to do it in Los Angeles. But the love that this show has gotten, obviously winning Best Revival, I think there are many, many people who would love for it to be able to be experienced by a wider audience who might not have gotten to see it at MTC.
And then the last thing I'll say about the press room is across the street from Radio City Music Hall in a little it's actually the Women's Republican Club on Rockefeller Center. And Andy Blankenbuehler got up on to talk at the press room, and he said, I just want to let you know, I got married in this room. So they use it as a rental room. He says, I have really good memories of this room. I got married in this room, and I'm still married.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah.
That's very good for him.
This is very, very,
very
cool.
Yeah. All right. So here's some things that I want to I did want to get through. Pascal Paul, halfway to their EGOT. They have they have the OT. I would imagine a Grammy is not too far away in their future. The E, they still have some options coming up. You know, we've talked about them in the past with the Flash thing. And then they wrote something for something else, and I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but I think they will get there sooner rather than later. Anna Kendrick was there. That's all I got to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben Platt, he was giving me flashbacks. And James, you might remember this. If you're about my age, you will remember the Micro Machines commercials, those little tiny cars. And the guy who did the commercials did all like this. If it's not Micro Machines, it's not the real thing. That's what I was getting. He also played Mr. Testaverde on Saved by the Bell, the driving instructor. I could get into Saved by the Bell trivia if we wanted to. But that's what I was getting from Ben Platt, because he talked so fast. But it was such a great speech. It was so compelling to see how he was so moved by this. I mean, everybody, James, we've been talking about the fact that he was going to win this award for almost a year, and we knew it was going to happen, but he still seemed so incredibly moved by it. And I think the line of the night probably is going to be the closing line of his speech, when he said, "The things that make you strange are the things that make you powerful." If that is not a perfect representation of the theater community and theater people, I don't know what is. The things that make you strange are the things that make you powerful. This kid's 23 years old. He's a Tony winner. He can probably do whatever he wants in his career moving forward, both on Broadway and you know, the fact that he's coming from a fairly influential family. But I think just on talent and personality alone, he has a bright, bright future. But he's also very, very insightful. And one thing he said about, I think it was another thing that was nice that he said about his dad. He said his dad taught him that you to be a great artist, you have to be a good person first, or decent. You have to be a decent human to be a decent artist. So I'm really excited for him. Really, really pleased to see what a great ambassador for theater and theater people he's become.
I have nothing to add there. It's just perfect. It's just, you know, I'm just so excited. I don't know Ben Platt. He seems like a really good guy, and I'm just really excited when good people, good things happen to good people. Rachel Bay Jones, just when she was in the press room, she was just like, I just don't know what to say. She is just love and light and goodness.
Well, and that was such a crazy category. You know, we talked about this before. Kate Baldwin, Stephanie J. Block, Jen Colella, Rachel Bay Jones, and Mary Beth Peel. I think no one really thought Mary Beth Peel was going to win, but I think the other four easily could have won that one. So if we're looking at categories where there was a surprise and maybe the performers could be genuinely shocked, this is probably the only one. I mean, I think Michael Aronoff was probably the leader. I think a lot of people on the outside, including us, were kind of thinking Danny DeVito might get it. But that wasn't a huge shock because he's won all the other awards. But this is really the only category in the performers ones where I think the favorite didn't win. And that's just because I don't know who the favorite would have been for this one.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. So let's wrap up. But before we wrap up, I guess we have to talk about what's going on over at the Delacorte.
Yeah, you texted me earlier today or yesterday, whenever the, you know, whatever, Sunday, and said you were right. And I had no idea what you're talking about because I hadn't seen the news yet. But because on Sunday, video of the assassination scene of the Public Theater Shakespeare in the Park production of Julius Caesar kind of surfaced. It opens tonight, Monday night, and some news organizations took wind of that and started blasting it out that a New York theater company is staging a play that simulates Trump's assassination. A couple major companies, first Delta Airlines, and that was followed by Bank of America, have pulled their sponsorship of the Public Theater. Delta Airlines has had a partnership with the Public for over 4 years. Not exactly sure how long Bank of America's was, but they have pulled their sponsorship. James, obviously, I'm very torn on this. This is something that I was worried about before this show actually even started. It seems like it's picking a fight without a whole lot of artistic value because they're placing Trump as Caesar, who was a tyrant and was assassinated. But the whole point of Julius Caesar is that assassinations aren't good. So I don't exactly know. And again, I haven't seen it. I assume you're going to see it, but I know Julius Caesar. I've read it. I've seen the movie. I've seen a production of it. I know Julius Caesar. I just don't understand what the artistic point was that Oscar Eustace was trying to make. And hopefully maybe some of these reviews that will come out will get to the bottom of that. But it just seems to me like it was picking a fight that probably would have been better served and better accomplished if they've done it more subtly.
I think that you've probably hit the nail on the head. Michael and Peter on This Week on Broadway, we talked about it off air because it hasn't opened yet, and they're going to give reviews that are very similar to what you're saying next week on the show. And I think that there's going to be a lot of criticism there. And while Bank of America and Delta Airlines are pulling their sponsorships, the Public Theater, I think, is going to stand behind Oscar Eustace. And
well, of course.
Yeah. And, you know, they have that little Hamilton show that seems to be making a little bit of bank.
They're doing,
so I don't think they're going out of business.
Fine. No. Well, and here's the thing is that I've seen a lot of very intelligent left-leaning, arts-minded people standing up for them and saying, this is Shakespeare. Why are you boycotting Shakespeare? I think that is an incredibly willfully ignorant stance to take on this. I respect every one of these people that I follow on Twitter or social media that I've seen say this. I just think you know what they're trying, what Oscar was trying to do. Everyone knows what Oscar was trying to do. And I had a problem with it when Ted Nugent started talking about, you know, assassinating President Obama. I had a problem with, you know, when they started talking about assassinating Hillary Clinton. I had a problem when Kathy Griffin had the decapitated faux head of Donald Trump. It's just all in bad taste and doesn't lead to any conversation. What it does, it leads to people being angry. If you were really trying to facilitate a conversation about tyranny and how it not only happened in ancient Rome, but is now happening in America, there are better ways to do that than simulating and staging the assassination of the current sitting U.S. president.
All right. So I'm sure there'll be more about this in the next couple of days, but why don't you get us out of here for right now?
Yeah, that was a bigger downer than the Bobby Darin number at the end of the Tonys. Anyway, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. The season is over, and it starts again tomorrow.
Yeah, seriously, we got 1984 in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So Matt and I will be back and chat with you tomorrow.